All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. 4/29/25. Beautiful day here on the east side. I hope it's great wherever you are at. We're definitely trending in the nice side for sure. I think it's supposed to be up to 80 degrees today, maybe. That's the hint of summer, and we are all about it. I love it. Just got back from my walk. Love that, too. Actually ran the first stint, if you want to say. I have to sort of do this part out on the road, and I ran it. Incorporated a little bit of running up until this point. I've really just been walking and starting to mix it up. Ran to the sign and then walked the rest. It was great. Checked my weight. I put on a pound. So that's just, I think, how we're going to be going here. Like I said, if I can lose 1 pound a week, I'd be happy and keep it off. But everything's good. You know, had a great freaking day yesterday. Absolutely. The kind of day that I dream of during the winter, which is a day of just tasks and cool stuff to do. I was definitely off. Meant to go see my dad, didn't. Changed my mind. I called him. I love him. I just had to do some other stuff. Went over to his house actually yesterday. I've been cleaning out his house unofficially, right? Officially, I would probably bring in a dumpster or something, but unofficially, I've just been using his two trash cans. And so last week, I got them things so full I could barely roll them and put them out on Sunday. They were picked up, so I have two fresh, clean trash cans now to start with. And so I went over to his house a little bit yesterday and you know, just it's just gut-wrenching, really. I hate it. I really hate it. All the stuff I'm having to throw away. And it's all just, it's not even usable. Like CDs, you know, like floppy disks, just all computer stuff. Fonts, font disk, bridge programs, computer parts. And then every once in a while, mixed in with all this stuff that really doesn't mean anything, there'll be like, you know, his colonel, you know, my dad was a colonel in the Air Force, his little colonel wings from his uniform. And I don't know. My dad was always like, where's my goddamn fingernail clippers, right? When we were kids, we would always take his fingernail clippers and never put them back. And he was always yelling at us. And so he's got this bowl. This glass bowl of, like, paper clips and fingernail clippers. And he must have 9 pairs, and I'm taking all of them, bringing them all over here. You know, all the things that my dad, the wonderful things my dad has done for us, and I definitely remember all of them, or, you know, I try to, but it's those fun things, like the fingernail clippers and his eagle wings and stuff like that that, you know, really mean a lot to me. But, yeah, it was a good day. Got some stuff done over there. Got out of there. And then just, you know, chiseled away at stuff around my house, right? I had to get the grass cut. I edged it, weed whacked it. The edging I've been wanting to do, I bought an edger. I want to edge it nice and fresh. And I did that yesterday and weed whacked. And then I weed whacked behind our house. We have our house sits at the back of a tree line. And, you know, we have our property. And then there's this sort of maybe 20 feet before the trees start that, you know, I don't know. It's not our property. It's the neighbor. It's not even the neighbor. It's the guy who owns the property behind us. But there's a stream and like a river between the two of us. And there's, you know, it's no man's land. So I, you know, I try to maintain it, try to keep it looking good. And I weed whacked it all down. We put landscape lighting out in the woods out there. So at night, the woods all light up. It's fucking cool, man. I can dig it. And, so I worked on some of that. We'd whacked that stuff down yesterday. And, then my buddy Ben texted me. He's like, can you help me with my irrigation system? So I ran over to his house, got his irrigation system up and running. It was just a freaking great day, man. Just, you know, I'd love to say, hey, this is what recovery is, right? Sobriety working for me in my life. And it is, but you know, like I said, it takes a lot of work to be normal. And what I'm doing today is just normal, or yesterday was just normal stuff, right? There's no awards handed out, right? These are just things that we take care of and responsibilities. You know, it falls sort of under that podcast I was talking about yesterday. These are all, you know, just things I need to do, right? These are all, it's like putting your clothes away, right? You know, where maybe inside the house, we need to make sure laundry and all that shit's taken care of. But on the outside, right, the outside of the house has its purposes and responsibilities and, you know, got to take care of those too. And when they are taken care of, it feels good. And so, of course, I just had one of those fun days that I got a lot of stuff done. Did not see my dad. I called him. I said, listen, I got shit to do. He's like, you take care of yourself, you know. He's a good guy. But yeah, I went to, so actually had a great day. Cooked hamburger from the cow we bought, which is delicious. It's amazing. I've never had a cow or a half a cow. I've never done that. And I wasn't sure what to expect. And wow, if you ever get an opportunity, you can buy, I think, a quarter of a cow. So this half a cow cost me $1,700. $1,750. And I don't know if that seems like a lot of money. But I would wait, you know, I spent almost $1,000 last year on meat from Kansas City Steak Company or whatever, Omaha, whatever. And the meat was okay, but it was not, it was cut thin. And, you know, I was able to do a butcher list and pick how I want these steaks cut and stuff. So I have experimented with some options of meat, but I've never personally bought a cow or half a cow. Wow, what a difference. Freaking delicious. And, you know, some people don't like meat. I get that. Don't listen to this part then. But if you're into meat, yeah, look into it. It was, to me, one of the best purchases I've made. So yeah, anyway, had dinner. And then, obviously, it was Monday, so went to a meeting. I flirt around on Mondays with the 12 o'clock noon meeting and the 6:30 meeting. If I can get to the noon, I try to do that. If I can't, I try to get to the 6:30. I definitely try to get in a meeting on Monday. And so, yeah, I didn't make the noon, so I went to the 6:30. What a great meeting, man. It was on the 8th step. Flat, stained. Never heard that song. Well, I've heard it. I've heard it recently, and that's why I played it. But I hadn't. I don't know. I never was a big Stained fan. Absolutely love Stained, and love the singer of Stained, Aaron Lewis. He's awesome. He did a cool Rascal Flatts song back in the day that was really good. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of gotten a little bit bored with the music I've been listening to. I listen to so much music usually when I walk. So this is under the playlist 90s bands. And so there's a lot of cool stuff in there. But yeah, that's A-List by Stained. But yeah, so I yeah, it was on the eighth step. And I mean, it's a I'm a big fan of the eighth step, and it really sort of gives me an idea of where I was and the journey to getting to where I am today. And you know, the eighth step to me is a litmus test for me, at least, on where I'm at. I love, you know, this is that step. So let me read this step. I think it said, make a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Let me just read it officially because, fuck shit up. What do you want? What do you, step eight. There it is. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I'll never forget the Seinfeld episode where there's a friend of George's, and he decides he's going to get sober through AA, which is one of the few times I've seen something that sort of refers to the Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps in a TV show. But he says, you know, hey, isn't there a step in there where you're supposed to make an apology? And he's like, yeah, there is, George. There's a step in there where we make apologies. And he goes, well, I remember when you lent me one of your sweaters, and I needed to borrow a sweater, and you wouldn't let me borrow it because you said that my head was too big and it would stretch out the head hole. and he's like, you know, that hurt my feelings. And he goes, well, you know, I'm sorry. And George is like, I don't think you said that right. I feel like that wasn't a good enough sorry or something like that. It was funny. You know, you know, when I take this litmus test, or when I reflect on my path to this recovery, I remember thinking about this step. You know, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends. Willing to make amends. That was a huge deal for me. I was willing to make amends. I was ready to say sorry. I felt bad for my behavior, sort of. And I definitely felt bad about it when I got sober. And I definitely wanted to make amends. And, you know, it's, but that the problem is it was a lot of self in there, you know, and when self wants to make amends, it's sort of for the wrong reasons, right? It's about looking good. Look at me. I've quit and I'm saying sorry. And, I want everybody to, recognize this and, you know, behave accordingly towards me now that I've quit and said sorry. And, because that's, but you know, that's self-serving, right? Self wants to look and feel better. And, you know, but I said the other day, and I'll say it again, you know, the steps find us. And we come to the sixth and seventh step, which is really the character defects and our shortcomings, right? Six is our character defects, and seven is our shortcomings. And then we go into the eighth step. And I can tell you that a lot of my character defects that I dealt with in the sixth and seventh step usually showed themselves, you know, around in relationships with people. You know, lying, cheating, stealing, manipulation, whatever it was. The people that suffered the most were the people that, you know, were my friend groups and the people around me and my employer and my neighbors, you know. And so, you know, and I'd said sorry before, right? I've said it many times, but finally was the time where I get to finally officially say sorry. And the problem is that it's a journey through these steps. And like I said, we go through the character defects. And then, you know, and I've said this before, you know, I had to make a list of all the people who had harmed me before I could start to understand, right? The role that I played, right? And the big word that comes in again, once again, accountability comes showing up. It's time to become responsible. Humility, surrender. You know, it's the transition really of humility. It's all of these things. It's the willingness. The willingness is really where I think is the most important. And I think all those words probably somehow mean the same thing, really. But, you know, I always share when I came into the program, of course, when I did this step, because I went right through the steps. You know, we're on a mission. We're going to get them done, and you're going to see that I'm really serious about recovery. And actually, I wanted to read this one. And I can tell you, I've been sober a long time. And it wasn't until just a few years ago that I really started to catch this paragraph. And it says, "These obstacles, however, are very real. The first and one of the most difficult has to do with forgiveness. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrongs he has done us. This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all." Yeah, you know, I had to, when I came into the program and really did these steps, you know, the first time, it was like, you know, of course, my parents, right, my neighbors, my employer. I could think of a few people I probably should make amends to, right? But not many. I loved saying that most of them were casualties of war. And a lot of them were casualties of war, right? A buddy of mine spoke this last night. He said, you know, I didn't reach out to the people in the bars and in the alleys and all this shit because, you know, that was just casualties of war. And I do believe that a lot of it is casualties of war, but there's definitely some people that needed to have an amends to. And, you know, obviously, like I just listed, my parents and stuff like that. Most of those people, though, particularly weren't interested in hearing an amends. You know, those are the people that had been hearing an amends, right? Oh, you wrecked your parents' car, did you? Yeah, I fucked up. I'm so sorry. You know, it's like even my parents' friends were sick of my bullshit. And so, when I finally did this step for the last, hopefully last time, I had to make a list of all the people that had harmed me. Because there was a huge list of those people, right? I mean, I could tell you 20 people that fucking screwed me over or physically at some point had hurt me. And we didn't have that. That list wasn't required in the 12 steps, right? To make a list of all the people that have hurt you. No. But what that list did was it allowed me to realize that all those situations usually were my fault anyway. You know, my behavior, my lifestyle had got me into situations. My selfishness had got me into situations that, you know, sometimes didn't work out well for me. And I would love to blame those other people. I would love to... you know, it was always reasonably around physical altercations, fights. You know, one of the painful things I think of, you know, recovery or living with somebody that's trying to get sober is, you know, just, you know, the pain of and worrying about how this family member is going to do or turn out. And it's really can be on a minute by minute basis. You know, I know as an addict, you know, I'd be like, I'm doing good, and then 24 hours later, I'm in a pickle. And the emotional roller coaster that used to happen with my parents, I think, was horrible, right? And, excuse me. But then I would think, you know, even after I got sober, you know, and I shared this, and I've shared this on the podcast before, you know, there was a situation with my buddy Rob and, you know, in San Diego back in those days, you know, there was sort of no rules, right? I mean, there was rules, but, you know, it was a loose group. And there was a guy, John, who had a house, and John had drugs. And, you know, when we needed drugs, we could reach out to John, or when John needed drugs, he could reach out sort of to us. And it was sort of, you know, like every morning, everybody would get on the phone and make the phone calls, right? Let's check in with so-and-so. Let's check in with so-and-so. Maybe so-and-so. First of all, do we have any money, right, to get anything? And if we do, or it's usually really what it would be, do I know anybody that wants something? Because if I can get them something, they'll give me something for doing it. You know, classic. Classic drug dealing 101. And that was just kind of the lifestyle. And we had gone over, it was at night, and I was with my buddy Rob, and we were looking for something to get somebody something, right? And, you know, we went over to this guy John's house, and Rob walked in. I followed him. We went down a hall, past a couple doors. Big guy steps out and just punches me right in the side of the fucking head. And, boom, I'm down. And I'm like, fuck, I'm the stars, right? What the fuck? My buddy Rob's like, what'd you do that for? And this guy was pissed that we were in his house. You know, he didn't invite us. And you know, of course, that night I had to go call my dad. My dad had taken me to the ER. I don't know what they did. I forget. It wasn't surgery, but it was, you know, it was a pretty big deal. Of course, there was probably an orbital fracture or something like that, you know. It really got my dad lit up, but, you know, we handled it. And we would talk about that story for 30 years, you know. And, but that would fall under a list of people that had harmed me, right? And I had a lot of those. I seem to have many incidents of people harming me. And my dad, like I said, we would talk about this, and he would be that son of a bitch, right? And we were victims. We were a victim, right? Because I took the punch, and he had to take care of me. And like I said, we talked about that for a long time until one day, right? And many years into recovery, honestly, it's sort of embarrassing to say. It always, you know, it's always evolving. We're never better. We're always got work to do. And one day I realized, you know, that was your fault, Tom. Going to that guy's house, didn't call, uninvited, walking in, you know, poking around the house and then getting punched. That was my fault, 100% my fault. And I remember sitting, we were on the back porch with my dad, and we were talking about that. You remember that time? And I said, you know what, Dad, I got to tell you, that was my fault. What? I go, yeah, that was my fault. And, you know, I fucked up. I shouldn't have been at that guy's house. I shouldn't have been doing drugs, right? I shouldn't have been doing whatever it is I was doing, right? And the next thing you know, I'm punched and you're having to take it. Now it's our problem. And that's my fault. You know, two things, right? One, you know, we don't want to do it again. It's good to take responsibility, become accountable, so hopefully we don't do it again. But the other thing is, you know, and the whole point of this is to make an amends and try to clear it up and try to move forward, move on. And my dad and I talked about that incident. That became an issue we talked about for 30 years. My dad was still having to deal with my behavior 30 years later because in his mind, his son had been hurt unjustly and, you know, it was terrible. And it is funny when, you know, when I started to go through this and then I started realizing a lot of the stories and tales and things I remember from my past are situations that happened to me that were always my fault. Right. And it's always something I guess since, you know, my dad's getting older and getting ready to pass on, you know, it's always those stories that he seems to bring up. But I brought them all up too. There's thousands of them. You know, I always loved the one where I hit the sign in San Diego, jumped out of the car and asked who put the sign here, right? That's how self-centered I was. That's how much of a volunteer I was. That's how much of a victim I was. You know, I want to blame a person that posted a sign, dug a hole and put a sign in the ground for wrecking my car when it was really the fact is I was drinking, I was driving out of control, and I lost control and I hit a sign. But it was thousands of those. You know, I remember ditching school and getting in trouble and then blaming the teacher. That teacher right? Didn't do enough for me. No, you ditched, right? And that's where these, when I think, you know, for me, it's, we start learning a lot about this in the fourth step, but at some point, you know, in the third step, you know, we're making these better choices and we're doing better things. And then we start to understand why we're doing it and why we did what we did. And I think the fourth step starts to answer some of that stuff. But, you know, there was hundreds of these stories. And I was always like, you know, it was the school's fault. It was the teacher's fault. It was that guy's fault. It was not my fault. And it's funny because all my life, my parents were like, it's your fault. And I'm like, no, it ain't. No, it ain't. And, but that's self-centered. That is, you know, I have children, you know, I have 12 and 13 year old kids. They're the same freaking way. Right. But they have an excuse. They're children. I was an adult. And the problem is that when I put that drink or drug into my body, it sort of locks me, right? Couples, decoupled, whatever it's called. I've been playing a lot of Star Citizen lately. I'm digging that game, man. Fucking awesome. But it locks me into that sort of period of my life. You know, when I started drinking and doing drugs at 13, 14, 15, I, you know, my maturity, my spiritual journey basically stops. And I'm stuck as like a teenager until I finally get my shit together. But, you know, it's selfish self-behavior. You know, it's funny. I talked about it in the podcast yesterday about putting away our clothes. You know, my son went back to his mom's this week, and I went into his bathroom, and there's a pile of clothes behind the door. That's what I used to do, right? But he's a kid. And, you know, I don't, hopefully my kids don't get involved in that shit, and then he'll start to mature. I see maturity happening, natural maturity. But yeah, it's fucking crazy. And so, you know, this step is, and you know, and so to kind of wrap that, to come back around to that, you know, as my dad talking about this, you know, my dad's been a victim of this for a long time. It's by whether it's, is he tortured by it? No, but could he think about other things? Yes. Right. So 30 years from the incident, my dad's still dragging it around. I'm still dragging it around. And when I told my dad that, I said, you know, Dad, this was actually my fault. I fucked up. We never talked about it again. I don't like to talk about the past. I don't like to talk about past drug use. I hate talking about it. And I can imagine my dad did too. And so for him to have to talk about these things, because I hadn't had, you know, what I don't, the honesty, right? The set to take responsibility for it. And so, you know, what happens in this step is for me is that, you know, we start to clean up the past and we stop becoming a victim, stop being a victim of our own stupidity, right? We find some accountability, we clean that up, and then we don't have to talk about it anymore. And at the same time, hopefully, right, we're preventing going through this in the future. You know, the other nice thing is you get to, you know, you sort of get to clean up these relationships if they want. You know, make a list of all people we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. They don't all want to hear it, right? But it's an attempt because I prefer, I like my life today, you know. I like to walk down the street and I don't like to have to look over my shoulder today. You know, my everywhere we go, you know, I live in a small town, but everywhere we go, I know somebody. You know, whether it's through recovery or just being in this town for 30 years. It's because of recovery is what it's absolutely because of. Because I've lived in other towns and was known, but it wasn't for my you know, good behavior. And it wasn't known by many. But I, you know, every store we go into, I probably run into somebody that I know that I met through recovery or, like I said, being here. And that's a great feeling. You know, I don't want to look over my shoulder. You know, I don't want to be living in fear. Because like I've said, having had worked all these steps, the thing that finally comes out in the end is just a peace, love, and free of fear. And free of fear means we clean up our past and we change our behavior for the future. You know, it's been a long time since I've had to look over my shoulder. And I like that. And so this is a great step. You know, it's, but, you know, once again, it requires, you know, years. I mean, if a person can get this right away, good for them. I appreciate that. Oh, shit, we're running out of time. Let me read this daily reflection. But, yeah, when you get to the, yeah. Good stuff. All right, daily reflections. All right. Group autonomy, April 29th. Some may think that we have carried the principle of group autonomy to extremes. For example, in its original long form, Tradition 4 declares any two or three gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that a group they have no other affiliation. But this ultra liberty is not so risky as it looks. AA comes of age, page 104, 105. As an active alcoholic, I abused every liberty that life afforded. How could AA expect me to respect the ultra-liberty bestowed by Tradition 4? Learning respect has become a lifetime job. AA has made me fully accept the necessity of discipline and that if I do not assert it from within, then I will pay for it. This applies to groups too. Tradition 4 points me in a spiritual direction in spite of my alcoholic inclination. This is a misquote. Bill is referring to the third tradition. Yeah, read that. I don't care. I mean, I care, but that's just, whatever. Listen, I hope everyone has a great day, and I appreciate you letting me share later.